So back in 2008, you know, the agency developed a new report that we presented to the board, and that's where we report on different, you know, performance metrics for the agency. And we the initial report had, you know, three different types of areas. One was operations and maintenance, with a lot of different categories. We had regulatory compliance, public outreach, and public events. And the board provided a lot of comments, and we've revised those particular performance measure reports over the years. And that's a typical report now, and it's routinely provided in the board's consent calendar. And attached to this staff report is the annual performance metric report for 2011. So this essentially summarizes all of the information that you've seen over the last 12 months in the monthly performance metric reports. So on in the staff report, I just have some of the highlights that I could run through real quick with you. One is that the agency did not have any permit exceedances in 2011, so that is seven consecutive years of 100% MPS permit compliance, which is a great accomplishment. We received and treated about 4.35 billion gallons of wastewater. As you see in the little analysis here, that changes each year based on, you know, essentially the volume of I&I through wet weather events that enters the sewer systems and comes to the plant. We processed and beneficially reused a little over 6,300 wet tons of biosolids. In the anaerobic digestion process, the digesters generated about 53.7 million cubic feet of biogas, and as a natural gas cost equivalent, about $161,000. Our O&M staff completed about 1,400 work orders. Those are preventative work orders and corrective work orders. As you see in the little analysis here, that we've made a significant shift from number of corrective work orders to number of preventative work orders, which supports what Mike was saying, that we have a very, you know, a well-accepted and utilized asset management program, because you want to do more preventative work than corrective work, which shows that you're maintaining the equipment properly and has a less probability of failure. So that's a great accomplishment. Our overtime was about 2.3% of regular hours, which is kind of in line with what it's been the last couple years. And a lot of the industry publications show that overtime is usually about 5%, so we've been maintaining well below that metric. Our staff received about 1,579 hours of training in these various categories. Our environmental compliance staff performed 22,400 laboratory analyses, and the number of analyses are in these various categories, and they're pretty consistent over the year. We have a five-year MPDES permit term. It requires a certain number of analyses and certain schedules. Then we have analyses for performance of the various treatment processes. Those have certain schedules, so that number stays pretty consistent during the year. The only fluctuation is if we have special water sample analyses for different studies at the plant, or the number of water analyses that our member agencies ask us to perform on their behalf. Then we've inspected about 656 businesses under our various source control programs. And there is a typo here in the staff report. You see that there were 714 in 2010 and not 714 in 2009, then there's a lower number in 2010, and I have the wrong number there, but it was like in the 600s. Then our public outreach met our metric goals. We outreached over 7,600 people. That was either through our schools program, where our staff goes in and give presentations to elementary school kids, or tours of the treatment plant, or our juggler or puppet shows that are shown at elementary schools throughout the county, or just interfacing with the public at various outreach events like the Marin County Fair, Marin Senior Fair, the Fairfax Eco Fest, the Marin Eco Fair, similar type of events. Then we had 41 odor alerts that our staff posted on the website as part of our communication outreach to let the public know that there's a chance that there might be an odor one day, and here's the processes that may be emitting odor, and here's the duration, here's the mitigating measures that we're putting into place to hopefully minimize the odors. Then we had 14 odor complaints over the last year, which we record, we investigate, then we provide some feedback to the individual or group that complained. And as we talked about last month, most of those complaints were from Son and BMW, until we had the discussion with them and the comprehensive analysis of hydrogen sulfide gas measurement, and explained our theory of that their properties over the landfill and the gas generated to migration of the groundwater and so forth. And Sonnen had made a complaint this month, which was good news. Then here are the various awards that the organization and the staff have received over the past year. And I won't go through all of these because over the last few months we've had these as specific agenda items. But just a very successful, you know, year in terms of receiving recognition from industry groups for the agency and for the staff. So that is the staff report. I can answer any questions.
Yes, just since we just had this, I was just wondering, is there an award that we should be submitting for Mike's program? I don't know what category that falls under or if there even is a category for it, but it might be something that the agency can, it seems to me like we're excelling in that arena. Anyway, some other questions. I was wondering, it's never listed in the matrix, and I was just wondering, what was the number of blending incidents in 2011? Do you know that offhand?
Yeah, the number of blending incidents is not reported in the metrics report.
Right.
It's shown in the NPDES and process report in the consent calendar each month. So you can go to that report, and which is item number E, and within... After the staff report, it's not E, it's F. After the staff report, there is a couple pictures there, and then you have the monthly compliance summary table, and at the bottom it shows the number of days that we blended. So you see for December that there were zero blending events. That's at the that's the last row in this particular table. So we report that out on one here under item 4F before the graphs. And
no, I mean 4F, after the pictures, after the color pictures. Oh, I see. The pages were stuck together. So can you tell me what the number is for the year?
I don't have that information readily at hand, but if you'd like, we could email that to the board tomorrow. Unless Mr. Cole knows that offhand. We'd have to look back through each of these monthly reports and add them together.
I actually would like to know what it was. I think it was 11 for the prior year.
Yeah, I could send the board an email
Since
tomorrow.
Since this could be an issue in the future, it's just something I'm kind of keeping aware of in the back of my mind. Additionally, there's statistics for the billion gallons of wastewater we treated for the last 3 years, as well as the wet tons of biosolids.
Mm-hmm.
And there doesn't seem to be a relationship between the two amounts. And my unprofessionally in this industry thought was there probably should be, but it doesn't appear that there is. And is there a reason why there isn't? So if we process, like in 2009, 4.1 billion gallons, and there's 6,200 wet tons, and then it was 4.9 versus 5,800, and then 4.35 versus 6,300. It isn't proportionate. And I was wondering, shouldn't there be a relationship between?
Well, it's a very complex relationship. You could probably do probably hire a consultant to do a whole study on that.
Oh, cool.
But one factor is, you know, the type of storm event, the intensity of the storm event, and when those actually, this is a calendar year report, so when that happened in the particular calendar year. What we experience in our collection system is, one, a lot of INI, and that brings a lot of material in at different times of year to the system. And also the main pipelines for the system are sized to handle the significant amount of flows that each of the collection system agencies receives and has to transport during these wet weather events. During most of the year, the flows in terms of the velocity in those pipelines are very low. So a lot of material settles out in the pipelines and builds up in the bottom of the pipe. When you get a significant rain event, you can pick up a lot of that material and bring it to the plant where it's then removed, goes to the digesters, produces biogas as biosolids. So really it's a function of size of rain events, how much material over the years settles in the pipelines, how much material gets picked up in a given year given the rain event. So it's a complex
really
relationship.
The chart would really be the three factors, maybe billion gallons of water treated, wet tons, and rainfall for the year.
And it's probably a multi-dimensional chart with a lot of different factors.
Because rainfall could all be in one day or spread out over 6 months.
a big load, you would have, say you have three big storms, that's all you have, and there's a significant, you know, volume of rain that gets in the sewers, the velocities increase, it picks everything up.
It suspends the solids and moves them along.
And one reason that we have a little higher amount this year is because we, you know, had drained one of the digesters, which can take all that material out and dewater all of it. So that adds incremental additional amount.
Oh, so that's why there was more this year, even though there was less water treated, there was more tonnage that resulted.
There's some type of relationship there, but it's not, there's not an equation you can use to calculate it.
Okay, and then I wanted to know on the preventative and correctional work orders. It's good that we've turned the ratio of corrective to preventative the way we have, but I was wondering, are we balancing the cost for all of the preventative programs in that evaluation? Because obviously if you're doing a lot more preventative maintenance, there's a cost to it if you hadn't been doing them before. And does that additional labor cost outweigh the consequences of a piece of equipment being out or, you know, those other effects?
We haven't done, you know, a analysis of that.
Okay.
But just generally I would say that it's better for an organization the more preventative maintenance you do, because you can schedule that out based on runtime of a piece of equipment on, you know, certain frequencies, and you schedule it out, you determine the cost for that, that feeds into your maintenance program within your capital program, versus, you know, just doing corrective maintenance, you're more just putting out fires, and it can take a lot more staff to address that. Mm-hmm. It could take, you know, downtime for equipment if you don't have the spare. That could cost a lot more in terms of just labor hours, potential risk to, you know, treatment processes to MPS permit to appliance.
No, I get that. That's why I was asking if that, someplace in there's a balance where it's actually less expensive and better for reliability of treatment.
It has to do with the risk and consequence graph that Mike showed in his presentation.
Okay.
We've identified what types of pieces of equipment that you just run to failure, and it's lower cost of the agency to prevent perform the corrective maintenance, such as a small little $300 pump. You just run that instead of spending, you know, $10,000 over 5 years doing preventive maintenance. You don't do anything. Then 4 years when it fails, you spend $300 to replace it, and maybe a few hundred, you know, staff hours to do it. So generally, preventive maintenance, I would say, generally is lower cost over time than having to perform a lot of corrective maintenance because things are failing because they're not being preventively maintained. In terms of where the balance is, I'd say that it's more towards heavily on the preventive maintenance side.
I think it would, the metric of doing an analysis of the labor plus the information that was in the report, you know, running it down and so forth, mm-hmm. It almost have to be, you'd almost have to have control, like a control study.
Well, I wasn't asking for there to be the analysis. I was just wondering if that was in the thought process. Because obviously if you perhaps got the ratio up to 10% corrective, 90% preventative, you might have passed the point of where it made sense to do that much preventative.
Well, you have to, when you do the analysis, you have to look at, are you hiring more people to do more preventative? Because you have the staff already,
right.
So there's certain, you know, labor and benefit costs to have those staff there. But if you can utilize those staff more efficiently doing preventative maintenance without incurring any more agency costs doing it, and then you can implement other programs like the asset management and become more efficient in your maintenance programs in certain terms of the preventive maintenance aspect, then those people can do a lot more other types of work. So the agency can do the core work through the preventive maintenance, and they could get involved in other activities also, such as Mike mentioned, all these teams that we have now. Now there's a lot more collaboration and dialogue between staff members on these teams, so we can just make more efficiencies in how we do all of our business, and we could share ideas and get more buy-in. In the, you know, many years, 8 years ago, you know, you had maybe 10% preventative and 90%, well, not that, 20%, you know, preventative and 80% corrective. People were, same people were doing all the corrective work, but there was a lot less other activities that they were participating in, generally speaking.
Okay. Any other comments, Commissioner
No.
Johnson? Any other comments? Anybody from the public wish to comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back. This was just to receive and accept?
That's right.
Yeah, I'll move that.
Pardon?
Actually, I'll move that.
Do I have a move, or a motion? Do I have a second?
Second.
A motion, a second, to receive and accept the report. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay, next up is item number 7, the CMSA regional charge alternatives. Jason?
Yeah, thank you, Chair DePauw. So, in closing your agenda packets, you have the final version of the regional charge alternative study, and that's also been posted on the agency's website for public viewing. And we have a staff report, and attached to the staff report, there are, of course, two correspondence from Ross Valley's manager, and then one correspondence back from me to Ross Valley's manager. And within the staff report, there's a summary of what was discussed at the last meeting, GPA manager comments, and a little background. I'll start with the background. So this study concept was first presented to the board at the April 2011 board meeting. In July, the board discussed it again and agreed to include that in the agency's fiscal year 12 work plan, and that work plan was approved by the board. We didn't have a board meeting in August, so in September we put the item on the agenda with the discussion focusing on if we wanted to complete the study and consider some type of a allocation methodology change this fiscal year, we needed to start the study sooner than later during the fiscal year. So the board agreed in September for the agency staff to prepare RFP, send it to consulting firms that perform rate studies, develop a scope of work and agreement, and bring that back to the board in October, which we did. We recommend HDR. The board approved the contract. That was a unanimous vote by the board. And that contract had a schedule that stated that we would bring the final draft report to the board in December and complete the report by the end of the calendar year. And we met those milestone dates. So at last month's meeting, HDR Engineering gave the board the presentation on the final draft report. There were a lot of questions, good dialogue between the board and staff and the consultant. We answered a lot of the questions at the meeting. A lot of the requests from the board were integrated into the final report. And the direction at the end of that presentation was for me to share the final draft report with the GPA member agency managers and let them know that the CMSA board will be having a follow-up discussion on this item tonight and to request their comments, which I would then summarize and present to the board. So I sent that that note out to the member agency managers after that December board meeting. The report went out, and the San Rafael Sanitation District manager, who's the chair of the GPA manager group, Ms. Doris Toy, she agendized a discussion of the study for that December 16th GPA manager meeting. We had that meeting, and both the managers reviewed the report before the meeting. They said it took about a half hour, 45 minutes to review it, run through some of the examples in the appendix. And we had a very constructive, positive discussion on it. They provided some comments. Essentially, they said they thought the report was well-developed. It was concisely written. It was very understandable. It made sense to them. We went through some of the calculations of the various alternatives. They said that made sense. And then on page 1 and 2 of the staff report are some of their specific comments for your information. The first alternative in the report was changing the allocation methodology to a single calendar year flow. The managers thought that they thought any of these alternatives were better than using the EDU count in terms of alignment with cost of service principles. They said that the calendar year flow made sense because we measure what comes into the agency and we can allocate the regional charts based on what gets delivered. They preferred at this point in time alternative 2, which is the three-year flow average, where we use every year we use a rolling average of the three-year flows. And they agreed with what the consultant, you know, stated in the report, in that within the CMSA service area, there's a lot of different types of ecosystems, and storm cells come in and release different amounts of rain at different amounts of time in different parts of the system. And so on a year-to-year basis, there could be a lot more volume of rain within certain systems that makes way into the sewer system. And they thought that the smoothing of the flow made sense over a three-year basis. And then I mentioned to them the discussion at the board meeting about, you know, the each agency is doing quite a bit of sewer line rehabilitation, replacement, and repair work, and that the attempt is to reduce the infiltration inflow and have a more robust, you know, reliable system. And that the concern was that maybe in a certain year there's a lot of repair work being done, which significantly reduces the INI. But if you smooth it out over 3 years, that particular district isn't going to get the credit in terms of a reduced allocation for that year because you're blending it over 3 years. It was their opinion that there's only a certain amount of INI, you know, sewer line repair, rehabilitation work that can happen in the system in a year due to staff resources to implement, you know, the particular projects, the cost for the projects, and the disruption to the public in terms of, you know, homeowners being impacted, you know, streets being shut down, things that traffic control, things of that nature, and that it's likely that any given year there isn't going to be that much rehab work being done in a particular system where you're going to see a significant reduction in INI. That was their opinion on that. So their preference was a 3-year flow average. They liked also the flow and strength, but they understood that CMSA at this point in time historically has not collected strength data from individual agencies, however, that we do have the resources to do that, and that they believe that that particular method closest aligned with the cost of service principle that was identified in the report. And they suggested to the board that if the board were to make some type of an allocation change, that during the year that we also gather that strength data so we have a future discussion on how that would change, you know, methodologies in the future. Then alternative four is where most of CMSA's expenses would be, which are fixed, would be allocated based on EDU flow, 3-year flow, and strength even. And the small portion of our budget, which is more variable based, which is driven by wet weather events, would be allocated that particular way. They saw the relevance and feasibility and viability of that particular option, but they saw that the reallocation would take a lot of, you know, administrative effort on the agency. They didn't see the value, as much value in going through that administrative effort for a very small allocation change between the districts. So anyways, that is a summary of the manager's comments. When I prepared the staff report, I captured those, summarized and sent it to the managers that provided the comments. They made some edits and concur with what's stated in the staff report. The Rossby manager didn't attend the JPA manager meeting. He's indicated, as you see in his correspondence, that he would like through the end of January to continue reviewing the report and providing his district's comments. And you can see in my response, I said he could provide comments at any point in time, and I would bring those to the CMSA board at the subsequent meeting. And that's pretty much the end of the staff report. So it's open for the board to discuss alternative measures. You could provide any direction to staff. Examples could be continue using the EDU approach for next fiscal year or develop the procedures to implement one of these other alternatives. If you go down that route, there's it's a multi, board, review and approval process. So we would work with hopefully the budget, the finance committee. We would draft out procedures, bring questions that they would need to answer to help us frame up the procedures and do the analysis. We bring that back to the board for a board decision or for some future work, additional work for a future board decision. So for discussion, any direction
staff. I have a question. If the board does decide to try one of the other alternative methods, would we have time to implement it by this next calendar? No. So it wouldn't be 2012. It would have.
It'd be fiscal year based.
It'd be this year.
Pardon?
Middle of the year.
Yeah. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Would we be able to implement it then?
If the board took direction in the near future, we could develop the procedures, answer the questions that we need to answer, get the guidance from the finance committee, bring it back to the board, get some procedural document approved for implementation starting July. But that would be for alternatives 1, 2, or 4, not for 3 because we don't have the strength data yet. Or we can continue using the EDU method also.
Okay.
Did this have to be implemented in June of this year for the fiscal year 12, 13.
Yeah, it would have to be approved by June so we could incorporate it into the final budget so we could have the allocations calculated and shown in the budget properly.
We'd have to give to the respective agencies enough lead time so that they can
consider in their budgets. That's correct. So if the board wanted to make a change, providing direction sooner than later would be to the advantage of the member agencies, so they would have the information as soon as possible.
So how much lead time do you think they need? 2 months? 60 days?
2 months before they prepare their budgets.
Well, I know Corte Madera does their budgets in March, April. They review it in May and basically the month of May and hold it over until June for any last minute items.
So Chair DePauw?
Yeah.
Given the uproar over the change in the EDU rate that occurred last year, I would think that if your agency was going to go to a flow-based system and your study showed that there was going to be ramifications to any agency that would force them to adjust their rates, that you might really want to consider doing it
13, 14.
Yes.
That's what I'm
saying. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Commissioner Johnson?
I wanted to point out something which actually is a kind of a problem with the study from an approach. On page one of the study, in the second paragraph, it talks about supposedly the three methods in the JPA for doing allocating charges, and it says EDU, wastewater influent volume, or wastewater volume and strength from each collection agency. But if you actually look at the JPA itself, it's clear there's only two methods, not three. It says the periodic regional charge shall be based upon the relative volume and quality of wastewater generated. There is no volume alone method.
If you could read next couple of sentences, we'll see where the board has a discretion to consider the quality data or not.
Can you read the whole thing, please?
It says, and shall be based upon the relative volume and quality of wastewater generated by each member. Volume will be determined based upon continuous measuring, which again precludes us doing averaging. Continuous measuring to measure total volume generated during the period. Quality will be determined by periodic monitoring and considering it in determining member charges if deemed appropriate by the commission.
So it's conditional on the commission. So quality could be used or not used. That's
well,
where just the flow only.
It says and, not or. It's an and sentence, not an or sentence.
Do you have copies for us?
I haven't studied that,
it's
but
on
it
page
sounded
10
to me.
Of JPA.
I haven't studied it, but if you read it again,
can we have a copy of that, please?
Yeah, I don't.
If somebody reads it out loud again, I can give you an opinion on that.
Okay. Then I also wanted to point out that on page 9 of the JPA, it said revenues required to provide monies for bond interest and redemption shall be based on dwelling unit or equivalent as here and above defined and determined. So changing it to volume and quality could only be done for operational funds.
That's correct.
Not for the bond portion.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Unless all the member agencies agree to amend the JPA
right,
saying
the
that.
Or the JPA could need to be amended.
Yeah.
Any other comments, Commissioner Johnson?
I also wanted to point out that a whole bunch of numbers were also changed in this final draft that weren't included in the list of what the changes were. They changed percentages and allocations between the agencies and with no explanation. So I don't know why the percentages were changed. I'm not clear on that, but in the appendix, many of the examples were completely different with no reason why. So I don't know what that's about. I do not believe that this smoothing effect is something that is required by the JPA. I mean, sure, it would be nice, but it's not something that we are supposed to be or should be really considering when we decide of how to allocate the charges. That's not
a suggestion on
how
to allocate the charges.
I'd love to talk once and not be interrupted by you, but maybe that's just a dream. So anyway, I don't believe that the smoothing thing is a factor that we can use in determining how in the future to make allocation of the operating charges to member agencies. The JPA is pretty short and simple about what we can consider and what we can't.
It does say continuous monitoring, right? That's what it says.
It says in terms of volume will be determined based upon continuous measuring to measure total volume generated during the period.
And we measure that. We have 25 years worth of continuous measuring of volume. I mean, really, the board.
No, the only reason I read that was about because we, at one point, we were talking about using averages. And so continuous measuring is not using, continuous measuring means you're using real numbers versus you're averaging years or doing other kinds of
math. Yeah, we have the total volume from each agency. We have all that data for each year for the last years.
I know.
So the board wanted to use a 3-year volumetric approach. We have the data to support that.
Well, I don't agree. I personally don't think you can charge based on 3 years for treatment that's just for the 1 year. Why would you pay charges based on years that have already happened? You know, that doesn't seem to me to be appropriate. And I think Rust Valley is doing more INI reduction work than probably any other agency. So, and I do believe that is a factor. We are doing significant INI reduction. We did $12 million of sewer rehabilitation last year, and that's a substantial amount. And to have to carry that INI reduction we created through for 3 years would be, you know, unfair to our ratepayers. Those are my thoughts. Thank you.
John?
Any other comments?
Kathy.
Pardon?
She does. She's got her hand up over there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I had thought that the reason for suggesting the 3 years was actually to be helpful, as opposed to it would be considered a punitive thing. I don't think I would have a problem with making it based upon an actual flow. My understanding was that you've got these variations that have to do also with microclimate and so forth in your wet weather months, mm-hmm. and so that this would sort of even it out as opposed to maybe having a really high one year and then come back. It would give you a more balanced, you know.
I think if you propose to most ratepayers that their MMWD bill was based on 3 years of averages, that people would be up in arms. And I think that's, you know, when you think about it.
But last meeting, I thought we all agreed. I mean, nobody agreed on any action, but I remember all of you talking about how the Ross Valley gets far more rain, generally speaking, than any other part of this area, and how it would be more fair to the Ross Valley ratepayers if you did a 3-year average. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I thought I heard that. That all depends on our interpretation of the JPA and whether it allows for a 3-year averaging or not. But I thought that's what everybody
Kentfield is the rainiest spot in the world,
right.
I think. But
yeah.
And so say it was rainy in 1 year, year one, but like this year, it's been fairly dry. So then, but we would be paying the Kentfield load for 3 years, even though maybe it was dry for year two and three of the period.
Not necessarily. Yeah. If the 3-year average is what we bill or compute so that we can bill out to the agencies, and then as we move along to the end of the fiscal year, and we now have a flow of X of whatever came in, I mean, we could true it up just like we do the EDU rates again, but we have to give the agencies some amount that they can be assured of that's consistent and constant and doesn't, you know, spike up and down each year for the ratepayers.
The problem with the 1 year would seem to be, let's say Kentfield had a huge amount of rainfall, a low amount of rainfall, or the Ross Valley did 1 year, so the rates were based on that, and that would be fair for that year. but and Ross Valley did their budget based on that. But the next year, let's say the rainfall increased tenfold or twentyfold, and all of a sudden you have this high flow, and all of a sudden you may have to at Ross Valley adjust your rates by 40% to your ratepayers, and all of a sudden you're in that same conundrum, like, how the hell do we budget for that? I'm not saying that that's the solution of 3 year. I think that everybody would probably have to consider all the alternatives. And I don't know what Chair DePauw was getting at, but if you did a 3 year average, it would seem to me that you would take, you know, let's say you instituted in fiscal year 13-14, you'd base it on fiscal years 11 through 13-14 for your first 3 year, and the next fiscal year you'd be basing it on fiscal year 12 through 14. So it would be a little bit rolling. I don't know if that's the fairest thing, but I think that's something for a consultant to look at. If everybody's agreeable to it.
And another factor that was left out of this, and that I guess it wasn't in the original scope of work, was how do individual member agencies calculate the EDU rates for commercial establishments? Like when San Rafael charges for a dry cleaners versus Ross Valley versus Puerto Madera, do they come out with different EDU numbers, or are they coming out the same? And that, to me, is actually an important look at evaluating how the current system works that we haven't looked at. And another point I just thought of earlier today was, at some point in time, somebody must have said one EDU equals about so many gallons, or however the measurement became. And maybe that was 25 years ago that an EDU was determined as the measurement. And have we actually thought about, is how much a normal or typical residence is using, is that still the same as it was when that was originally calculated versus today with low-flow toilets and other devices that have been put into more homes? Is that still even the same? And I don't know if that's something...
That's a reasonable question.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
And I think it would be a good idea for the agencies to collaborate on having uniform...
standards.
Strength charges for the same type of
uses.
Establishments.
Yeah, uses.
Yeah.
Commercial uses.
Restaurants.
That would be, you know, individual agencies working together on analysis like that, not necessarily through the CMSA, because the CMSA doesn't use specific EDU information from commercial establishments. When we allocate our regional charge based on EDUs, we just want the total. If there's likely ways that it's calculated differently, but that's not necessarily in the purview of the CMSA board.
No, and I don't think we ever thought about that before. And it may not be a big factor, because it may not be that we're really doing, maybe we're doing something in different ways but coming out with sort of the same result. But it is something that we should think about at this point in time when we're looking at this. That is something that isn't in the study, that is something I think we need to know. Along with the residential EDU thing, which I really just thought of. I should have thought of it before last meeting, but I didn't consider that. But it may be time to look at what that is. Maybe we're overcharging residences or undercharging them. I don't know.
Not mine. We hardly have any water.
It's your turn to
never flush. It's just, you know, dry wells.
Commissioner Hirsch, I didn't mean to speak over you, but
could I ask a question? I was being facetious, so it's okay. It was really important to you for SAN 2 to look at the averaging. Can you kind of give a hypothetical as to why you thought that was?
I just thought that with the high spikes, with the rainy season that comes, some years it's there's more wet weather, some years there's not, and so that a 3 year average would take that into account, just so that there's no spikes to the various agencies when we're proposing a charge, and then all, like Jack said, if we propose a charge based on, you know, 5.1 billion gallons that came in and 5.5 billion gallons came in for treatment, there's, you know, a 10% spike up in fees or in volume that comes in, and the agencies are going to have to, you know, cover that. And I just thought that by having a 3 year average, the highs and the lows would all be averaged out.
Chris, isn't that what figure 2 on page 8 of the revised regional charge alternative study tries to present? It's a foreshortened, you know, you can't do much in the way of, you know, if you extrapolated from this and came up with what the
you know, made it the whole 4 years and did, okay, what would charge be in year 9 and then charge be in year 10, taking the averages versus the actual year. But that's still, it's a real short sample to make a comparison. But given that there are 25 years, maybe it would be, I mean, and I don't know whether maybe that is for an agency like Ross Valley that's working really hard to do gazillion feet of change, that it's going to get closer together as time goes on. And so it would only be deleterious to the extent that there were still the big separation years. Actually, for sand, too, there's hardly any variation in the 4 years shown.
I have a feeling these problems with doing a flow-based charging system, because you'd have to do a true-up or something like that, which becomes problematic if there's a big variance at the year end, which we've seen is an issue. And I think that's probably why the original board 25 years ago went with the EDU system. I don't know, but I would assume, given these...
The original board, they amended the JPA to include the EDU count method, because there were examples of other agencies where you allocated a certain amount of capacity in the wastewater treatment plants. So you'd say, okay, your capacity is 30 MGD at the plants. Well, Ross Valley, you get, starting out, you get, you know, 14. Santa Fe, you get 12. You know, Larkspur, you got
and
this much.
Turn away anything over there?
Well, you'd have that amount of capacity. What happens is some agencies, maybe they didn't do as much work in the collection system, so they would actually maybe want to buy some capacity from another agency at the treatment plant. So if you're measuring based on flow and you use capacity also at the plant, you could have these side arrangements happening between individual districts.
Which is basically the same thing as charging for flow.
It's a little bit different. So that's the financial consultant at the time presented that to the board. And they said, we want to avoid, you know, these side arrangements between districts that could complicate, you know, the CMSA's business, so let's just do the EDU count. What this study is proposing is that we just measure flow with our flow meters and we allocate the charge based on what comes to the plant from each district, not, you know, how many EDUs are there, how EDUs are calculated between the districts. That's all collection district business.
But again, you have to do some kind of in arrears true up, because otherwise somebody, definitely what you estimate at the beginning of the year or however you decide to do budget allocation at the beginning of the year isn't going to be what it is at the end of the year.
Well, there wouldn't necessarily need to be a true up, because the finance committee could say, well, we're going to use the flow for a calendar year. So when we're developing a budget, it's set for that calendar year. We know the numbers, they're exact. And that's how it's allocated based on that calendar year for each district.
The calendar year start based on the flow from the year before.
Right.
Well, from the
finance committee
period.
Can establish whatever year they want. They could say April to April. That could be the flow year.
So you're talking about the calendar year 2011 for the budget we're about to create.
That's right. So that would happen. So when you come around the next year, there's not necessarily a true-up like you would have with the EDU count. You just measure the flow and say, well, this is the year that's in the policy, January, February, whatever it happens to be, and this is what was measured at the agency for the districts. So for that year, then, it gets allocated based on that.
And again,
that's where the variability can happen, why the three-year average, whatever that three-year period happens
again,
to be, helps.
Yeah, again, it's not like you're really paying for the charges that are actually the charges, true charges for treating the wastewater you're sending. You're actually paying for them off cycle. It's not actually accurate.
Well,
it's sort of accurate, but not really.
It just complies within the JPA. That's the best we were trying to do with the alternative.
Depending on the actual flow.
Right.
It's kind of like your property taxes. When you pay your property taxes, and I think, this is off the top of my head, when you get your property tax bill in October, It's based on the lien year January 1st, the preceding year. So you're paying your property taxes this year for the value based on January 1st of 2012. So when you pay your property taxes in December 10th next year, you'll be basing it on the value as of January 1st.
Its flow is not like an assessed value.
But remember, when you pay your property, okay, I'm being kind of academic here, but let me just finish. Your property taxes are based on July 1st to June 30th of that next year, and they're basing it on the value of January 1st.
Of the prior year.
So you're really six months behind.
Earlier date, right.
Yeah, and that's kind of what they're doing, except for you're basing it on the flow from the year before. So it's as near, I think it's as nearly accurate as you can get without really fooling around with the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you, as long as you don't vary the chronological period you select, as long as you don't say, okay, San Rafael, you're January to December, and you're April to such and such. I mean, as long as you all have the same one, and as long as you keep moving it ahead through time, it really doesn't matter if it's based upon an odd cycle, because it all catches up. It's the same representation of a year in a point in time reasonably close to when you're needing to pay dues towards the treatment.
So if we were talking about doing a flow-based system in order to somehow not have the same issue of a big variance in charges to a member agency occur, rainfall and I&I is going to wipe out that as a consideration. Because a dry year, a drought year, versus a very, very wet winter are going to have dramatically different flow components and charges to be allocated.
The base,
and that's not something that's even predictable.
The base flow from each district is pretty much consistent because there's very little development in the districts. So, like right now, you could say the base flow is going to be about the same, and the only variable factor is the wet weather flow. That's correct. And that's why the three-year average everybody thought was the best, because you smooth that out over time. So for budgeting, at least it's a little more predictable.
You
don't have the huge variations on a year that could occur.
The 3 year was very good.
I have a comment. You say it's very predictable year over year, but if you have a lot of intrusions, because your infrastructure is going up high, it could be higher, right? Regardless of any reports, if you have everything shown. But I don't want to get into that. What's bothered me is that the statement in the staff report talks about alternative three. I'm not supporting that or not supporting it, but it says this alternative best aligns with the cost of service principle. This three aligns with the cost of best aligns with the cost of service principle. That's what this is all about, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe we need to talk more about what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, the terms I understand. But there was some discussion, I think, here several months ago as to the number of agencies that use flow versus EDUs throughout the state. And I think the minority are in the flow category. Is that right?
No. It's 70%, because we're doing that study right now. For
70%
use EDUs and 30% use EDUs.
No, you reversed what he said.
That's what I just
said. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I heard you, but I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Are you confused?
No, I'm not confused at all. That would be nice if I could talk to you.
Sorry.
Since I haven't talked all night, I could listen to all night if I could talk for a minute. So what's bothered me is it seems to me that's really what's driving this, right? There's a question about cost of service and how it's fair to each of these agencies. And how do we get our arms around that? I mean, this is just a statement in here.
Yeah, the principle that the consultant...
Forget the average.
Yeah. What the GPA says, we can use this particular method.
Yes.
And what the consultant put in the report are references to various industry publications regarding the cost service principle. And what it simply says is that the customers pay fairly and equitably for the service that they're receiving. So in CMSA's example, we receive wastewater, a certain volume, with a certain amount of material in it from each district on an annual basis. Our core business is receiving that wastewater, processing it, treating it, disposing of it, managing the biosolids properly, and all the other, you know, activities that are required of us in the MPS permit, the regulatory program, and so forth. So the cost of that service has to be allocated in some way. The consultant was saying, by using this reference, that it's the flow and more preferably the flow and the strength allocates the cost fairer than the EDU method does, because EDU is based on, you know, whatever the agencies establishes an EDU using whatever particular calculations they use for an EDU. They report it to us, and we allocate based on that. But there's a de-link between EDUs and the actual volume and material that comes here. And part of that happens to, is what Commissioner Johnson said, is how much water, groundwater, stormwater gets into the particular systems. That means there's more water coming to CMSA, there's more work that has to be done here to process that and treat that and all the other business associated that we do. Does that make sense? Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it makes sense. If it's such a good principle, why are only 30% of the agencies using it? Just asking the question.
Yeah, I don't have any of that, you know, information that Commissioner Johnson mentioned. You know, one reason could be is that a lot of the agencies in the state are full service agencies. They don't have this structure like we have, collection only and regional treatment.
Don't some agencies, I was reading something a while back about the report, we have a combined sewer and water agency?
Mm-hmm. There are some like that, like East Bay Mud.
Sewer water or sewer storm?
Yeah, but they base it on water usage.
Yeah, okay. That's like EB Mud.
East Bay Mud.
Probably San Francisco.
San Francisco does.
They do the amount of water use.
Because they can measure from the source.
Right.
So you'd have to go to MMWD to get their records, and then each agency could measure from the source.
Since we're wandering all over the place, I will make one comment on the residential EDUs. Several months ago, we had a discussion in Santa Fe. We had people representing the apartment owners.
Right.
And they're very upset about the fact that a one-bedroom apartment pays as much as a three-bedroom home. And then when you have 20 apartments, you've got 20 people paying it, and they don't use that much service.
Right.
The problem you have is you've got fixed embedded costs in the operation of your collection system. So if you start squeezing that through the tube, at some point, someone's going to be paying more than they're paying today, and some will pay less. So that's a minefield.
Actually,
it's a big minefield.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's a huge issue. But
it doesn't necessarily mean your costs are going to go down, because if I show you that you're using too much water, or putting too much flow in, and you cut back, then there's less flow to allocate back to the people, so your costs are going to go up.
That's right.
So, but the thing is that you can't manipulate the EDU numbers so that you can say, well, the one-bedroom place is a half an EDU and the three-bedroom place is a one-and-a-half EDU.
And it's really not related to square feet or number of bedrooms. No. It's related to occupants.
I gave you an example of a local agency that uses water use information. It's Novato Sanitary District. They're a regional full-service agency, so they can directly bill their customers, and they collect on the property tax roll. And what they do is they have a very good relationship with North Bend Water District, and the Water District provides them with the water use information during the winter months, so there's no irrigation or minimal irrigation use. And the Novato Sanitary District, in some financial policy they have, or a sewer use ordinance, I'm not sure the document, it says, and I'm just going to generally paraphrase these values, but I don't know exactly, that if you use between 60% to 180% of the average homeowner, that you pay, you have one EDU. If you use less than 60%, you have, you know, some fraction of the EDU, like a half, that's what you get charged. If you use more than, you know, 80% of the average, then you get charged, you know, two EDUs. So they get that information from the water district, they figure out what the average is, then they have to import that into a database for all of their properties, and then they base their tax collector information on that, how much they assess each property based on these three different tiers the EDUs. And, you know, according to their staff, that's a significant amount of work, you know, getting the information, putting the database, doing the data QAQC, and then transmitting that to the tax collector.
Just to follow through on that, how do you then bill to customers? Does their tax roll?
It's on the tax rolls.
Yeah. The county tax roll, right?
County tax roll.
Yeah. But instead of everyone paying a certain amount from the survey agency, each ratepayer is going to be paid a different amount.
Yeah, one of those three amounts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for commercial, then they have the kind of same structure you all have.
That's the same as your agency, which has to bill your commercial at a different rate.
Right, industrial, commercial, single-family dwelling.
But billing to customers, just you all know this, it's a collection agency, you know, calculation and procedure. It's not a CMSA procedure. We just look at what's coming in or whatever EDUs are giving us.
Also, we do it the same way. Winter usage, we get our Excel data from Fairchild over at MWD, and then we crunch it into our, you know, what we're supposed to bill, send to the county, tax rolls go out, and that's what's based off of is usage, winter usage.
So you have that same kind of a thing where if you're between a certain percent of average, you're...
There's a different multiplier. We have a formula that... And I haven't had to do this for a while because we outsource it now. But
I mean, like an apartment dweller who's using very little water is not using.
It's really based off of the meter usage.
Yeah, so, fresh water.
And it can be very challenging sometimes because a lot of times I've seen you'll have an apartment complex that maybe should have 4 or 5 meters that maybe has 3 or something. You know what I mean? So you know, they have to break it out, and that's really on the private side before it gets to the city.
Yeah,
so it can create challenges.
But Ross Valley is just about to receive their rate study document from the consultant of looking at perhaps instituting a flow-based system for our district, at which the consultant I know is looking at all of these questions that y'all have raised here tonight, and how, because there are questions we've been coming up with in the meantime too. Well, how would you do that? Where would you get the numbers? And you know. Yeah, and if we charge these people less, that means these people are paying more. Mm-hmm. And instead of these people squawking, these will. And it's a never-ending thing in your head, but we're about to get all the results very shortly.
It's a form of response to some of the outcry we've received from this last year also. I mean, people have asked us to look closer at usage, and, you know, we're committed to doing that. So that's what we're
doing. Right. It sounds like we have the same people that came to see you all came to see us.
Oh, they did. They were around. Yeah. They were at LAFCO also.
Mr. Chair, can I just make a suggestion? I don't know whether or not we do this fiscal year or next fiscal year, if we decide to do it, isn't the issue. I think we really need to drive this thing to a point where we're in a position where we come up with something we want to do and agree to it, and then worry about the timing of implementing it. And so I'd suggest we continue the work. Jason, I see from this memo from Brett Richards is going to go to the West Valley Sanitary District on the 25th. Is that correct?
He's asked for me to give a presentation to their district.
Right.
Okay. Or someone.
Yeah. And let's hear about that as well, how it goes and what the reactions are. But I think we put a lot of effort in this. I don't think we should just abandon it at this point.
No.
Abandon this?
I don't think we should abandon it.
Oh.
Right. I think we need to proceed with it and not worry about if it's 12 or 13. Let's just come up with something that we either can support or not support.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go around here all night. Mm-hmm. And I have one other suggestion, quite frankly. This is really not the kind of subject to discuss in the evening. It really would be prudent if this board would hold a daytime meeting, at least something that starts earlier at 4 o'clock, then late at night when we start to just kind of go on and on and on. This is something I think we need to put a lot of energy in.
I agree.
Yeah. So I'll let that with you as chair. Think about
you mean this particular discussion or every meeting?
No, when we have something coming back.
Have you like this?
Yeah.
It doesn't work on 2 hours.
Marsha, I know, thrives on this. And,
I'm a night person.
Yeah, well, I'm a night person too, but certain things that keep me awake and certain things that can put me to sleep.
So. And by the way, I really appreciate what you said about the fairness and equitable principle, because that really is really important to me too, and that really resonated with me, what you said. That is what I think we all should be keeping in mind as we look at this.
So do we have any direction for Jason, just to have staff stay on this, maybe start pulling together other things?
I don't know if we can find out about more information about the EDU stuff, like I asked, because I think
we could amend the contract with HDR and have them work with each agency to figure out how they calculate, you know, EDUs for commercial. But
one EDU equals, because it may be something that.
But that has no basis to how we allocate our charges. That's great information for the districts to share, the districts to, you know, collaborate on, maybe a standard program, but it doesn't affect CMSA. And our board has no authority of requiring agencies to change it or.
Just take a look at each agency. Everybody has a different EDU rate.
But why does CMSA shouldn't be taking a look at
that? CMSA shouldn't.
Well, but CMSA is charging based on EDUs.
EDU reported by the districts. So the districts do their calculation and they report information to us. Some districts, you know, provide supporting documents, others don't. We just receive what we receive and we allocate based on that. I mean, it's a separate concept for the districts to develop a standardized approach on how they determine and calculate EDUs.
No, I wasn't suggesting that, but I was suggesting that before we shake up the current system, we should actually see really exactly what the current system is. And I don't know if we've really defined that fully or not yet. In fact, I would assert that we haven't.
Well, CMSA doesn't understand how each of the agencies calculates their EDUs.
If alternative one was the base choice or the existing, we don't even know what the existing really is. We know more about the other alternatives. Right, we know more about the other alternatives now than we know about what we're doing today.
All we know today is each agency gives us a figure. And we add those figures up, and we divide it by their particular figure. That's all CMSA does, and that's all the JPA allows us to do.
It's in the interest of each of your agencies from the standpoint of the fact that you pay a share of the pie is fixed, the budget, and the repayment of debt or whatever. So how you pay your portion of the pie depends upon how we allocate the share. And if one agency allocates on a different basis, the EDU thing, assignment, then it's going to be there's going to be differences that might fall into that fairness category. You know, within your district, there's equity, so to speak, but among them, there might not be, but that can't be us taking a look at it. That really needs to be the managers of your three districts examining it, putting their heads together and saying, well, how do we compare? What is your dry cleaner thing? What is your whatever? And that's not stuff we can ask for. But it's not bad to know. I would think that you'd want to know. I mean, I'd want my district to know that.
I've got one thing.
I'd like to move this on and give Jason some direction so we can just move this. We've beaten this.
Well, it has to do with this attachment on the map.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm not clear on something. I don't know. I'm still trying to learn some of the things that go on here, so I apologize for me not knowing the protocols and procedures. I'm not aware of if our district wants to invite Jason in for a presentation. I wasn't aware of that we had to get the blessing of the board to make that happen. Is that what everyone else here does when you present or go to San Rafael? Or I mean, I don't remember you ever coming to this board saying, you know, San Rafael's asked that I come by and give a presentation. So I feel that maybe this is, I'm not familiar with that here.
There's no formal procedure.
It sounded like it had to come back to the board for some sort of review or something before you could come and visit us, which we miss you, you know. You haven't been here in a long time. You know, no one makes a better presentation than you do.
Are you asking him to come?
Well, I think we did.
Brad asked him to come.
He copied us as directors. Yeah. I mean, pressures on the board, we're aware of it, definitely. You know, and that invitation is to come to one of our board meetings. You could imagine how I felt when I saw this. I was confused.
Well, why don't you do this? Why don't you guys do your presentation, and then Jason can come back with further follow-up with questions or with answers to any of your questions. Your board does a presentation on you know, the regional study, or ask HDR to come in and present.
So now what we're asking, what you're saying for us to do, right?
No. I'm just a better order for this would be that HDR come in and present the regional study. Your board hash it out.
So we're not allowed to ask them?
No. Then Jason does a follow-up after HDR does a presentation if your board requests it. If your board needs, you know, further clarification.
Okay, we'll take that to our board and find out if that's acceptable.
It's just that you're doing your study. HDR is in there presenting this. You're asking, you're bantering back and forth, and then you, once everybody then gets familiar, then Jason can come in and, if you'd like, and do, you know, further follow up. I mean, and I don't know, it's
interesting.
Well,
thank you.
No, I mean, that's my two cents. That's my two cents.
I'm very appreciative of your comments.
Thank you, Pat.
Generally, from councils, it's a council would ask a city manager, for example, or a mayor, in the case of a mayor like you, mayorship like you have in San Rafael, to invite another director of an agency to come in, as opposed to
manager.
And the manager kind of saying, if you don't come, we'll send this to arbitration. There's a kind of, you know, I mean, that's what your manager said, that if CMSA chooses not to honor the reasonable request, staff will recommend that this issue be added to our list of arbitration. When I read your manager's comments and responses, it wouldn't have been a very good invitation to me were I the person being invited, because it's got a lot of, there's a lot of attacking in it. Is this like when you did something bad before? Is that, you know, those kind of comments are rather,
off-putting
and kind of don't start you out. When you go to somebody else's organization to make a presentation, you kind of like to know there's a level playing field, not that you're going there where somebody's already used you kind of as a dartboard. And that's
the feeling. I can totally understand that. Okay, thank you.
So I guess that's one reason why I would think it would be great if it was the board inviting open-mindedly. I don't know.
So it's really the tone of the letter and the insulting manner in which it was written.
Yeah.
And
that would be
and also that since it was written that way, it now will go through a different course to get the general manager to present down there, other than the way others here at this board can receive presentations at their cities or districts.
Well, yeah, I think it does.
Okay.
I think it does.
Fair enough.
Over the years, in you know my 16 years sitting on this side of a table, when we've had desired to have somebody come in. That we used to have a lot of conflicts in our school district over who got to go to Kentfield and who got to go to Larkspur, where the lines were. And when people were fighting about it, you didn't command somebody and attack them and then expect them to come and have a reasonable discussion. Mm-hmm. You had to kind of sit down separate in a different room before or after or whatever and have a talk, as opposed to, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it does make a difference.
You know, sometimes people just need to be grown-ups and go where they need to go and do what they need to do, despite maybe not feeling welcome. I don't feel welcome when I come here every month.
But nobody writes a letter telling you that all these things
worse stuff.
That's all right. The point's well received.
I mean, I agree about the grown-up.
Okay. Anyway, Jason, continue to stay on this. Maybe we can get some more, you know, and have staff, you know, build, you know, an informational table.
I'd like to see a start towards looking at alternative one, since we don't have a three-year average, which I felt personally was much fairer than just 1 year, because of the inequity and rain we get. And, you know, San Rafael might get 1 inch, and Sausalito, you know, district might get 4 inches. So I thought the averaging was the fairest way to do it in a growing 3 years. But what I'd like to see is begin to work towards at least looking at that and implementing it probably next year.
Okay. They do have the data for the three-year average.
Yeah.
Do we have it?
Okay, then.
Whatever time period.
Strength at this point. Have you started to do strength measuring?
We would need direction from the board to do that.
So to me, strength measuring would be a part of an equitable division of an allocation system, because strength is a factor of wastewater treatment. So I would think that if we wanted at some point to have a system that included strength, we need to start measuring it. Otherwise, we'll never get there.
We need to start pulling the samples.
Right, doing whatever it is.
The board can take, you know, the board can provide multiple directions tonight. One direction could be to start to develop procedures for alternative one or two, and it could also be for the staff to start to develop a representative, you know, sampling program to gather strength information from the districts. Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be two pieces. There could be five pieces of direction to us.
For those two,
whatever the board wants us to do.
Then come back to us next month, and we can.
But gathering the strength data, that takes a lot of resources. It'll take a lot of time to do that. So it'd be something that we just wouldn't go do just to get it done. But if it was direction from the board to do that, because we'll potentially look at another alternative next year, then we'd do that.
Well, maybe it might be just something to put into the budget for the upcoming year.
It'd be with our existing staff and equipment, so it wouldn't be any budgetary impact. Okay. It'd just be impacts on staff workload, essentially.
But I guess what I'm getting at is I'd like to start building a database on strength.
So that's some direction that you'd like us to start gathering strength data.
Whether it be once a month or every 2 weeks or whatever staff feels is appropriate.
Sounds like there's consensus.
I think it's vital.
Just start building on that data bank. So. All right. Okay, moving on. Next up is item number 8, the North Bay Watershed Association.
Was that the only direction, just to start gathering data? So no, you don't consider any other type of alternative in the future?
Well, alternative 1 and 2. You know, a year-to-year-to-year cost and a three-year average.
So start working on the procedures for both of those alternatives?
Yes.
Yeah.
Should we do that through the Finance Committee?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think the Finance Committee can sit down and...
Okay, we'll start to scope that out in terms of what we need to do, and then we'll coordinate a meeting with the Finance Committee probably sometime in February to take a look at the one-year procedures and the three-year procedures. Then internally, we'll develop the sampling program at different times during the year to get representative strength information from each of the districts.
The North Bay Watershed Association had the focal point of its meeting this last week on what they referred to as legacy land use impacts on Cordovadera, San Anselmo Creek. I've mentioned this before because I used to be the representative to the flood control also are a flood control advisory, and there have been several presentations offered on the geomorphological history of the Corbett Air Creek watershed. And this presentation is not as satisfying to watch on your computer, but it is available on the flood control website for the whatever the district is for Ross Valley. And so Laurel Collins talked about essentially the heretofore unrecognized history of the rerouting of the creek path as a result of the construction of various accoutrements to the railroad. And if you, for example, take a look at where the water floods in Ross, it's actually flooding along the former creek bed. And also, if you take a look at it from Google Earth and other means that people who have this kind of training have, you'll see that there's a riparian creek vegetation pattern where there's no creek, because that's where the creek used to be. And the vegetation, having set its roots deep into the ground, can reach water. But in fact, the creek is not there except when it overtops its banks, because it was rerouted for convenience by the railroad. These are actually things that have served to assist them in designing some of the mitigations to the flooding and help them understand it. And Laurel did this study because she was interested in it. She wasn't paid by any agency to do this, and it took her about a year. And she went back into authentic resources such as newspaper accounts, photographs, and journals of ranchers and the railroad histories, records, and lawsuits having to do with where certain things were located, all the way back to the late 1700s. So it's a pretty amazing report. It's kind of my bread and butter. It's what I used to study, so I was like sitting there.
You get off on that.
I do. there was a report on the various projects that we've talked about before that were funded this year by North Bay Watershed Association. But the project that's coming up is a very reasonably priced $50,000 study that has to do with further information about sea rise, and it's being done by the Point Reyes Bird Observatory, which is no longer just a Point Reyes Bird Observatory, but it's a rather full-service environmental organization that has the capacity to do a lot of research, and so they're going to do a citywide. I don't understand. I'm going to stop now. I mean, there's laughter taking place and this and that, so I don't think there's, I don't know, right, it just kind of feels funny.
Next up is the Rumble Report by Commissioners and General Manager, Jason.
Sure, so my December report is a handout. I'll just go through it real quick. As I mentioned during the Metro Report, that we're eligible for a 7-year Platinum Peak Performance Award from NACWA for meeting our permit requirements for the last 7 consecutive years. So that's great news, and we'll be receiving that award from NACWA likely in August of this year. That U.S. EPA Region 9 was sent some information out about free energy audits for wastewater treatment facilities. We expressed interest in receiving the free energy audit to supply various information that met their criteria, but they informed us that it'll probably be in fiscal year 13. So I'll just let you know when we have the audit completed and what the findings were from the EPA. That the CAFR and PAFR reports were submitted to the GFOA by the end of the calendar year. Commissioner Hartzell and I attended the January 4th Larkspur Council meeting, and we briefed them on the Ross Valley debt service underpayment issue and what potential actions the CMSA board is considering. That you all recall that we defended Corbett Air and SD2 in the lawsuit brought against them by Ross Valley Sand, and CSRMA. Fortunately, that has been resolved. CSRMA paid the settlement agreement on that, and they are in the process of determining how much the amount of reimbursement to CMSA for all of our legal expenses after CMSA accepted the tender of defense from Sanitary District Number 2. So that was in November 2010 when the board accepted the tender of defense. And CSRMA indicated that we'll be receiving a check for the reimbursement amount, you know, high five figures likely, you know, end of this month, early February. Then one thing that's not on the memo here is that the agency's rolled out a mercury thermometer exchange program. Mm. So any board member or staff member or member of the public can bring in their mercury thermometers to the agency, and we'll exchange it for a digital thermometer. Then after a certain period of time, we will dispose of those thermometers properly.
These are not outdoor thermometers. These are medical-type thermometers.
Small ones.
How about another job you swipe your forehead with?
There's mercury in it. We'll take it.
No, that you get out.
Oh, so we only have, you know, a little digital thing. I don't have one to show you all. But
That's what I used to use, the little strips.
I love the strips. The strips are so fun.
So we're going to develop some outreach materials for that. We'll have them at our public outreach booth and on the website. And then lastly, the Ross Valley Sand District, you know, published and distributed their winter newsletter. And there's a couple articles I thought you might be interested in here. One's regarding consolidation, and one is regarding CMSA. And one interesting quote that I thought here was important for you all to know about was that they're suggesting to their customers that they evaluate a public-private management solution for CMSA, similar to Novato Sands. That would be like contract operations. I was surprised that they would be suggesting that in their newsletter, since CMSA has an outstanding regulatory compliance record, and we've maintained our staffing at the same level for many years, and we're a well-run and respected organization.
Want to have that same kind of look at themselves?
Pardon me?
That's not just to a treatment system, is it? How about a collection system?
I didn't see any reference in here for them having a doing an evaluation of a contract operator of their collection system.
Right.
But if contract operators, like my general thought would be, is if the regional agencies wanted to look at contract operations, it'd be done on a regional basis. At collection systems, at the treatment plant, overall everything, not just one agency. But yeah, these operators, they'd be glad to come in and run a collection system also.
Oh.
Sure they would.
Indeed.
Just like the treatment plant, they do it all the time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's my report.
All right, thank you. We'll have a 5-minute break.